listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Lesson planning and Helmut von Moltke. Planning and improvisation in the martial arts and in life. I'm frequently asked a question by students before a class session begins. Sir, what will you be teaching today? This question evokes a similar response from me to that evoked by another question. That question is, what is the first thing you would do in a fight? I usually can't give a straight answer to either question because I don't have enough information. Regarding what I would do first in a fight, I need to know more. Like, what type of physique does my opponent have? Appearances can be deceiving, but information is better than ignorance. What is the environment like, including the surface of the fighting area, the size of the fighting area, the lighting, avenues of escape, etc.? How far away is my opponent when I realize that I am in a fight? And much more. Likewise, before I can answer the question, what will you be teaching today, I need more information as well. Most especially, who's going to show up for class today? Will any of the students be there for their first class? Will the group be large or small? Will there be an even or odd number of students? Is there a wide variety of levels among the students? This doesn't mean that I don't have a lesson plan. I do. But when conceiving a lesson plan, it's important to remember the famous words of the German military genius Helmut von Moltke. He said, "No plan of battle survives contact with the enemy." You should put together a lesson plan, but you should make it flexible enough that you can easily modify it to fit changing circumstances, or even scrap it altogether if the spirit seizes you. To me, one of the greatest secrets in life, and in the martial arts, is to learn the proper mix of thorough planning and inspired improvisation. This concept can apply to fighting as well, especially martial sport competition. It's important to develop a well-considered game plan and practice it thoroughly. It's equally important to be ready to improvise if the game plan fails to do what you wanted it to do. American football serves as a good illustration of this. Football coaches work very hard to design offensive plays and defensive schemes for every contingency, and they drill their players very hard to assure that they know how to execute them effectively. Yet many, maybe even the majority of attempted football plays end up not quite working out as intended. Sometimes the result is quite ugly for the team attempting the play, resulting in what is sometimes called a broken play. But even in a broken play, some or all of the team might improvise so effectively that everything works out fairly well, or even occasionally very well. So if a large fraction of plays don't work out, why draw up plays and work on them at all? Why not just improvise all the time? Hard and bitter experience shows that to be a bad idea. To paraphrase what I said earlier, people in all kinds of pursuits have learned the value of striking a balance between careful planning and inspired improvisation. Many martial arts systems have the concept of improvisation built right in. It's often called recountering. You attack, the opponent counters, you recounter. Some Filipino martial arts call this recontra. Some Indonesian arts call it sambut. Getting back to lesson planning, early in the career of a martial arts instructor, it's especially important. There's nothing like preparation and planning to help you feel confident enough to face a room full of students with high expectations. And for the first part of your career, it's a good idea to stick to the plan in virtually every class. But gradually, ever so slowly, you will begin to notice moments where you'll have thoughts like, what this student really needs is to work on his balance, or his power, or his footwork, or whatever else. Early in your career, you might ignore these thoughts for fear of looking indecisive in front of your students. But later you learn to trust hunches like this more and more. Let's look at some of the contingencies I described earlier. What if a first-time student shows up? Well, the way I prefer to teach makes heavy use of interaction between students as training partners, with secondary emphasis placed on solo drills. But first-time students are not usually ready to competently pair off with students of a higher level. So I frequently need to temporarily segregate the beginner as he or she practices solo exercises and drills. The next question was, will the group be large or small? When the group is larger, I will not be able to devote as much of my personal attention to each individual as I would if the group were smaller. That means I'm more likely to give the students drills with which they are already somewhat familiar. When the group is smaller, I'm able to introduce techniques and concepts more readily that the majority find challenging. This is because I can easily go from student to student, making small adjustments and giving tips to help ease the student into the learning process. The next question was, will there be an even or an odd number of students? This may seem a curious detail to find significant, but it's actually quite significant in a class context where we do a lot of paired drilling. Let's say I'm lesson planning for a one-hour class. Let's allow 10 minutes for warming up. That leaves 50 minutes. Let's assume that the drills that I'm planning are 3 minutes each in duration. Our 50 minutes leaves time for 16 three-minute time slots. But that doesn't allow for switching equipment around, like trading bag gloves and punch mitts, for example. It also doesn't allow time for instruction by the teacher between drills. Let's drop the number of time slots to 12. That's only 36 minutes of pure work in the one-hour class. Let's assume that your students are doing drills in which one student is the feeder, or the trainer, and the other student is the receiver, or the student. If you have an even number of participants, you simply divide the 12 time slots by 2, giving each student 6 rounds of work and 6 rounds of being the feeding partner. If you have an odd number of students, you now have a problem of logistics. If you want to do the same 3-minute drills, pairing each student off with a partner, you will now have at least one 3-person group, with the odd man practicing solo every third round. That means that it will now take 3 rounds to give each student 1 round of work on the drill, at least for the 3-person group. Further, that means that, at least for the 3-person group, each student will now get only 4 rather than 6 rounds of work on the drill in the 1-hour class. Alternatively, you could shorten the rounds for the 3-person group to 2 minutes. This at least has the advantage of giving each student the same number of rounds, although they will still each end up with less training time due to the shorter rounds. Unfortunately, this also means that a separate timer would be needed for the shorter rounds of the 3-person group. Of course, another solution would be to improvise by giving the students a completely different type of drill. But in that case, there goes the lesson plan. The next question was, is there a wide variety of levels among the students? First, I need to explain that mine is a small academy, and I teach 95% of the classes myself. That's for 5 different martial arts, each with its own schedule of classes, plus a full schedule of children's classes. Under these conditions, it's simply not possible for me to offer separate classes for intermediate or advanced students. So if the answer is yes, there is a wide variety of levels of students present for this particular class session, yet another logistical problem crops up. How to challenge each level of students and keep them all busy? One answer is to have selected a drill which has a level of difficulty that can be adjusted to give each student a version of the drill appropriate for them. Another is to assign completely different drills for each level. The more teaching experience you gain, the easier it will be to make the judgment call, deciding whether it's better to stick to the lesson plan or to improvise. So the next time you start to ask your instructor the question, "What will you be teaching tonight?" be sure to show a little understanding if he or she doesn't seem to give you a straight answer. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, or check out old episodes of The Martial Brain at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.